Cozy in here. They're gonna be facing here, so you don't wanna stand back here. Yeah, maybe up there. Just sit in a microphone. Is that a good idea? Oh, I know.
Someone is trying to deal with children.
They're with grandma right now. I was home till about lunchtime, and then grandma took over, and then I went home to get the pizza, and so I've kind of been running my neck around all day.
He never indicated to me that he was going to be here.
Here, wear this. I'm not going to tell you why.
You want to shoot a text? Ready to go? Okay, let's get started.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. We're going to leave the door open. It's a little bit warm in here. Maybe it's just me, but... okay, we're going to quickly go over the agenda. We're going to start with the presentation from our financial advisor, Public Financial Management, and Kevin Roddy is here to provide that presentation and to answer questions. And then we're going to go into budget balancing. I'm going to talk about process and some staff recommendations that you asked us to come back with after the December presentation, and then we'll have some discussion at the end. So with that, I'm going to get Kevin's presentation up here. Sorry, I should have had this going. Give me a second now. Here we go.
All right, thanks, Leslie. What we wanted to do today, and we've given this presentation a couple times, is the kickoff to the budget season, is really reflect on how the rating agencies are, what they're currently looking at in terms of evaluating municipalities. We did a transaction last May. They gave us some direct feedback on what they were seeing with regards to the city. and how our policies fit into that. So that's, as an overview, a couple of the topics that we're going to go through here. Just to start, I wanted to do a brief review of, you know, why, what are bond ratings, why they're important, and go through that process with you. But a bond rating is basically an independent credit evaluation as to the credit worthiness of a locality. It reflects, it's trying to quantify really the risk of default on certain qualitative and quantitative aspects of the locality. So the higher the credit quality, the higher the bond rating, the more or the less likely the default risk, the higher the credit rating. So as you can see there, these are investment grade ratings. They range from in the double B range all the way to the highest investment grade rating would be in the AAA categories. There's two sets of ratings. The two primary rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Moody's, have different rating grids. S&P has all the capital letters, and then Moody's, the first letter is capital, and then the lowercase on the second set. So, as you know, the city of Charlottesville is AAA from both Moody's and Standard & Poor's, and has been for about the last 50 years. As far as we can tell, this goes back to the early 1960s. So that's certainly something to be very proud of, this accomplishment being the highest rated category. What the rating agencies look at in evaluating your credit are really four different sets of criteria. First, the economy or the demographics of the locality. Second, the debt. Since what we're trying to determine is our ability to repay the debt, how you have your debt structured, the amount of debt you have structured, whether you have fixed or variable rate debt, are all important determinants in this process. The finances, what your source of revenues are, what your expenditures, how you do on your budgeting process, that's an important variable in the aspect, and then management, the experience of the management team, what policies you have in place. So those are all the four primary categories that the rating agencies look at in evaluating the debt. Why is a credit rating important? Well, if I'm an investor, it's important because it allows me to make a quick determination of what sort of return or I should be getting for my risk tolerance. If I was one to borrow a bond and it was out in California, I could quickly determine the value of that by looking at the rating on that bond. The lower the rating, the higher I would expect my return to be. Why is it important to the city? Well, it gives us benchmarks. Needless to say, there's a lot of numbers that go into the various analysis that allows us to benchmark and see how we're doing compared to other localities out there. It allows us to identify strengths and weaknesses that we would have as within the city. It's also an important economic development recruiting tool. You know, one would say success breeds success. The stronger the locality, it gives industries some comfort that they're coming in and they're dealing with somebody that has their house in order. And so I think that's an important thing. And lastly, but not least is really it gives us greater access to the capital markets. It lowers, by being the highest rated that we can be, it gives us the lowest possible cost of capital in the market. We have a chart up here that just the horizontal axis is really the AAA rating, GO rating, and then it shows various categories at lesser ratings above that, and tries to quantify the cost on, we just picked $100 million, somewhere in the ballpark of what our historical capital borrowings have been, as well as projected future capital borrowings, And while, you know, one would look at the different rate differential between a double A and a triple A is only a quarter of a percent, that's really about 10 to 15% of your cost of borrowing because interest rates are so compressed here. You see on the little chart, it says a 10-year maturity is currently interest rates in the 1.78%. So a quarter of a percent really does add up, and especially on large sums of money, you're talking about over the life of the issue and a 20-year amortization, about $2 million. The different cost of borrowing between an A-rated and a AAA rating is about $5.8 million. And as one could expect, we're in a very favorable interest rate environment. As interest rates go up, the credit spread has a tendency to widen, so that cost could be even greater in an increasing rate environment. So that's just a little bit of a brief background on a refresher on why a rating is important. In terms of what's going on with the rating agencies, you know, I'm sure everybody follows the news, a lot going on with the federal government, to say the least. And that's keeping the rating agencies very busy and actively involved. You know, with the recession that we're working our way through, Moody's, one of the two primary rating agencies, in April of 2009, you know, saw the direction of that the market was going in terms of real estate values and the stress on localities, and put a really a negative outlook on the entire local government sector that is still in place. Then in 2011, while Moody's reaffirmed the U.S.'s AAA bond rating, they put a negative outlook on the U.S. as well, and that's in place. And so that caused everybody to step back, because what a negative outlook really says is that we don't like the direction that we see everything going, and if it continues to go that direction, there'll be pressure to lower the rating, which at one time everybody thought, you know, it would be a hard press to have the U.S. lower the rating below AAA. So, as everybody knows, you know, everything gets pushed down. So it became Moody's in December of 2011 said, well, if the U.S. happens to get downgraded, what about all these other AAAs? Can a locality have a rating that's higher than the United States? And so they went through and did a detailed evaluation of every AAA credit. And what they honed in on is really who had exposure, who had what they called federal linkage, who had a lot of federal contracts, federal employees, you know, different types of exposure to the federal government. And so, needless to say, the Commonwealth of Virginia was one of those that they identified. And so they specifically, we had to go through a questionnaire and fill that out. The good news is Charlottesville came out of that evaluation and not being associated with a negative outlook. But the majority of the rest of the Virginia AAAs, other than in the Richmond area, didn't fare as well. So as you can see on this list here, the other three of the four AAAs on the page have negative outlooks associated with it: City of Fairfax, City of Virginia Beach, and Alexandria. That's continuing to go on as the whole sequestration and debt ceiling items are going on. Moody's is doing another evaluation of that, so that's to be determined, but they're, needless to say, the Moody's and both S&P are closely evaluating the credits of the United States, and with the linkage, if the United States get this downgraded, each of those localities with asterisks will get down in their rating as well. As I indicated last May, we did a bond transaction for some new money needs as well as some refundings to save the city money. We went to both Moody's and S&P And I think this page is really interesting because the rating agencies, and we can get you the credit reports if you would like, but they do a great job of really outlining what they see as strengths, challenges, and highlighting a couple areas. So the city's strengths that are highlighted in the report are, you know, obviously strong presence with UVA being here in the medical center, strong financial position. I think they view this as critical. I thought the quote was very good, that, you know, really despite ongoing capital needs, they feel comfortable in the city's management with solid financial policies in place and reserve levels to handle these future needs. So that's a strong statement, good support of what you have going on here. In terms of challenges, below average wealth factors, you know, and one thing I meant to mention earlier too is when we talked about the four criteria, the economy, finances, debt, and management, I think the important thing from y'all's perspective is really controlling the things that you can control, controlling those variables. There's not a lot you can do. We can talk about this being a challenge, but there's not a whole lot you can do about that. There is, you know, you're trying to make strides with economic development initiatives, but there's only so much you can do about that. The second challenge they mention is really pension funding levels, and this is becoming an increased focus for them throughout their credit evaluations. They cite in their report, although the city's continuing to make its ARC payments, your funded ratios really remain low compared to other cities, including within the Commonwealth. So we're at the bottom edges of that. It's currently in the 58% to 60% funded range. So that's going to be an increased area of focus as we move forward. But Moody's cites this, and again, that's going to be a growing area of focus on that. In their report, they actually they added this section a couple years ago of what to make the rating go down. Obviously, very important to a lot of localities. And again, some of this we can control, some of this we can't. Substantial declines in tax base and wealth levels. You know, I think the recession that we are working our way through stress tests a lot of this. We've come through it. So I think that's a good case study for us. Decline in the reserve levels. Obviously, having reserves in the bank remains critical to them. They view that as a significant foundation as your rating, and really increasing your debt burden, which makes sense. And they know what your current CIP looks like. So any significant additions to your debt burden would put stress on your rating. So that's three logical things. I think it makes sense, but they put it in writing there. The last point on this page has really become an emphasis to them over the last couple of years, too, is really structural balance. And what they mean by that is current revenues meeting current expenditures. If you happen to come across one-time sources of money, they want to see you using it for one-time costs, not on an ongoing where you'd solve a problem next fiscal year and then the following fiscal year you'd automatically have a gap in your budget. So they really are drilling down on the questions with regards to that. The last section I wanted to go over is really look at a couple of the policies that we currently have in place, namely general fund balance is a percent of our operating expenditures. We've had that as a 12% policy, had that in place for a while. You know, I think we talked for a couple years. That's on the lower end. This chart or this stat here is updated through 2011, which is really the latest data that we can provide. But it says that, you know, 87% of all AAAs maintain a ratio with regards to this that's higher than 12%. So that's saying the, our funding level, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, is higher than 12%, but if we just maintain that at the minimum level, that's certainly on the lower end. Now, we offset that because we have a debt service to operating expenditure ratio that is on the aggressive end. It's 8% or less, and this says that about a third of the AAA cities have a ratio that's greater than that 8%. So the two ratios kind of work in concert. One is on the more lax end, and one's on the more aggressive end. If we turn to, or if we look at this slide here, this gives us some of these ratios that we were talking about that compare this. The middle column there is Charlottesville's policy of the 12 and 8%. There's a sample size out there of almost 200 AAA cities. The median on that is around 16.8% for AAA and AA strong cities out there with similar population. Again, somewhere in the middle, 16%. So we see that. On the debt service ratio, both ratios are in the 9%. Our policy is not to exceed 8%. So I think these numbers are interesting, but it stayed somewhat consistent since we've been looking at the chart.
Does it imply, can you go back to the slide, please? Does it imply that we should be thinking of more than 12%?
We should be saving.
Yes, and we'll raise that with a conclusion at the end. So all these numbers are hopefully going to get us to a conclusion.
That's a good thing.
I guess one more slide, I think, before we get to our conclusion. What we do as part of our 10-year planning is really look out and look at our CIP. The CIP that we're operating under assumes that we're borrowing about $7.5 million a year in years 19 to 24, in addition to what we already have in our CIP. We're growing our budget at 1% and see how we do with our debt service policy of no more than 8%. Then we ran a case here where we added the school reconfiguration in this. The second column over, we can see that just with our straight up CIP at a assumed borrowing rate of 4%, we exceed our policy out there in 2023. So we're basically in compliance with it for the majority of that period. If we add the schools in, we exceed our policy there in 2019, really driven by phase two. And then when we add phases three and four, we're well over the policy. So under our stock CIP, I think we're in, 10 years is a long way to project anything. I think we're in pretty good shape with our base CIP. But as we consider other needs, we just need to stay conscious how they fit into our existing policies that we have in place.
And that's if we bonded the entire thing rather than raising revenue to pay for it.
Correct. Okay. Correct.
Correct.
Okay, and then this will get us to our conclusions slide, where we get, there's certainly a lot of uncertainty out there today in the state government, federal budgets and stuff. So the rating agencies are closely monitoring this impact. This will remain a work in progress. We just talked about the debt ratio with our current projections. But in terms of policies, we're going to undertake a comprehensive review of the policies and look at these policies. Our policies currently, I think we have six of them. They're very concise and to the point. We're going to try to add a little bit of detail to them. But one of the things that we're recommending is strengthening our fund balance policy from 12 to 14%. We have the economic downturn policy that's currently in the, I should mention that our policy, we're right at the 12%, but we've also got additional money for the unassigned category. We've got the economic downturn fund policy. We're recommending a funding level of 3% there, currently at 5%. So we would be transferring some money basically from the economic downturn to the more traditional general fund balance policy.
So that's about $3 million if it was between 12 and 14.
Yeah.
In our current budget.
Right. And so we've got some text on the screen. I won't go through it, but it's really intended to, you know, your main general fund balance should be there. I mean, it's not so that you can't get it for any reason. There are reasons that you can. It's supposed to be a rainy day fund. It's supposed to be there for emergencies. You don't typically want to draw upon it. If you need to get it, it's certainly there. That's why it's there. The economic downturn fund is really more of a fund that would be there that's a little bit of a buffer. It talks about, you know, reasons that you can get to it and what the payback period would be for it. So the bottom line on these two policies is you already have this money currently in the bank. It's sort of reallocating this money, and what it will do is it will allow you to get credit for having it on hand. Even though you have money sitting in these different categories, we're trying to define it. We're trying to make sure that the rating agencies see the strength of these policies. We've currently got about 18% sitting there today. And so, but what the rating agencies see, and define it. I mean, the rating agencies see that your policy is 12%, and there are local governments out there that, you know, I've got 18, I've got 12, I'm going to go spend the other 6. So we've had a history of being very prudent with our money. I just, even though we're AAA, I don't think we're getting full credit for having the strength of the policies in place. So what we're recommending is not an additional funding. It would not have to roll into your budget. It's just really reallocating and taking a look at this. And that would be part of our comprehensive review and a little more detailed policies that would be bringing back to you.
So it's more than the economic downturn fund that we're thinking of calling.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, if I may ask, so if we have these end-of-year surpluses that are 3 to 5 million, essentially what we should do is define those and put that into this 12%, go to 14%. Is that what you're saying? Because we wind up having these surpluses
that have gone to the CIP.
That have gone to the CIP, and you're saying we need to be much more accurate and.
I'm saying you have currently 18% existing. So if you had additional, so this would allocate money for about 17% of it. So if you had additional monies, it could go into this. It could go into the CIP. You'd be making determinations on where that goes. But this establishes a little bit higher minimum funding levels for you because. Again, I know as we continue to establish this economic downturn fund, that fund has grown. There's some question about when do we get it? How do we access mm-hmm. it? It's been a great policy. It's a great thing to have. One thing we'll bring back to you too is that the right name for the fund, because that may create some confusion with what exactly. Policy is, but any additional amounts you could add it to the general fund that could take you above the 14%. You could dedicate that to the CIP. You could dedicate that to you know, the pension issue that I highlighted earlier. So not this really is kind of redefining some of that. And as we talked about a couple years back, you know, if we see stress in the CIP on that 8% threshold that we've been pretty comfortable with, a couple years back we talked about a trade-off. They're going to want to see higher fund balances on hand to see that number inch up. And so we'd be taking our first step here, setting a higher floor, giving the rating agencies some comfort and getting some credit for it. So in the future, if we did need to work on that up, then we could.
I would be optimistic. It wouldn't be all bonded, but if we did do the, and you have it on the previous page, but the numbers of, it's up to 11.32 if we bonded everything and did the school stuff. If we did an 11.32 debt, how much would the number have to be for the kind of our savings account?
For the fund balance.
For the
general
fund
balance.
Yeah.
To offset that kind.
Yeah.
If
those were the only two things changing.
Or is it not that?
It's not that
pay for
if
it
the debt
too.
Ratio goes up, how much was the...
I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
This is just telling you how much you could borrow.
I'm just trying to see what the... kind of what the ratio, like if one goes up a little bit, how much does the other one have to go?
Right. I think it's hard to say.
Okay.
Yeah. And part of what, I mean, I think the one chart kind of showed it a little bit too, is that, you know, our peer group was in the
9%
range, mm-hmm. and we're at 8.
And they were at 16.
And they were at 16, and we're at 14 plus
okay.
reserves.
All right.
So
that
we're
just
at 17.
Kind of, I'm just trying to get more of a mechanical view of it than really an answer to
the
mathematical question.
So
okay.
it isn't an exact science, but I think we're showing good faith by raising our savings account to raise our potential debt policy
okay.
a little
okay.
bit.
If we were to raise it, will Moody's and S&P tell us beforehand whether it'll affect us, so or are we taking a chance?
What we did a couple years ago is we had an, you know, I'd call it really an offline discussion with them on saying, if we do this, how would you look at this? So they won't give you an exact determination, but we can get a pretty good feel, as well as, you know, part of our policy review, we see what other Virginia have. I mean, the 8% is on the lower end of this, and so it would be a complete analysis before we make that recommendation.
And this 3 year, if we added within 3 years to replenish it, does that also afford them to, so that we could put more of our other funds in there but use them and show the rating agencies that, but we're putting it back?
Yes.
That's the point of that?
Yeah, and I think the thought is that, you know, if you use it, you really needed it. So to have you with a 1 year replenishment doesn't make any sense. So what you need is that game plan to, you know, hopefully the economic cycles are pretty quick. We used it. We suggested a policy where you'd use up to half of the balance in any year of that. So you wouldn't be drawing it all down at once. You'd use a half. You'd have to solve some of the problem potentially on your own, and then develop a game plan as part of future budgets to replenish it.
But just, again, trying to make sure I'm understanding everything, and I know it's putting you on the spot to ask you to apply these numbers, but looking at your chart on page 13, and if we did adjust our debt service ratio to be more in keeping with our peers, to be about 9.1, it does suggest that, for example, we could incur some of the phase two of a debt burden from a school reconfiguration if we then had provided about close to 16% of a fund balance policy. Is that? So that's what I'm looking at. If we went from 12% to 16%.
And also, if you have a means to pay for that, too.
Right.
The debt service is still...
Yeah, but I'm just looking, again, kind of what Ms. Akos was going, and I just wanted
a whole combination of...
Yeah, I'd say the only difference is really you're going from 12 to 14 on the base and a 3%, so it'd be roughly, your fund balances would be roughly 17%. But yeah, you would fit within those parameters and stay within really your peer group.
But we could raise that 12 to 14 just by moving her here.
I know, that's kind of interesting.
That we currently have.
Because we actually do have about...
Where we do have it.
17, we just don't have it all in one pot.
Right.
And that's, that would be really, and that's part of your analysis.
Yes.
Great.
That's great.
Yes.
Sounds like the thing about the pension may be a little more painful, isn't it?
Yeah, that's you know, and you aren't alone on this. A lot of localities, and we were talking to Bernard earlier, too, because ultimately we'll be looking at pension and OPEB. And so what is OPEB? Yeah, OPEB is the post-employment benefits, so versus just the pension. And so the other post-employment benefits. We're well funded in one, and we're on the lower end. And so part of this whole analysis is going to be looking at the two in concert and what you do and where your money gets allocated. It's kind of been that next wave. They put some reporting requirements out there, and so they're just starting to come in. Some of this is liabilities. There's differences of opinion on this.
When you say we're over on one, does that mean we offer more benefits or that we just have it more paid up?
Most benefits, there were rules that took effect about 5 years ago that you have to treat it just like you treat a building retirement system, which we always have. So the city is contributing to what they call the annual required contribution, which is an actuarial calculation. So we do not have to put anything on our balance sheet as a liability until we make that contribution. A lot of localities are not making that contribution. So the discussion Kevin and I had was, if they're going to rate us on our defined benefits plan, are low compared to others, they need to also take a look at the other retirement benefits, the health care benefits.
Okay, I understand.
Great benefit.
Thank you.
Could you go back to page 12, please? Would it be prudent for city to increase 8% to some higher percent? 8% debt service as percentage of operating expenditure, we have 8%. Would it be prudent to do more than that?
That would be part of look at that. That's where we were saying, you know, your peer group is 9. The lower the number, the better for you. From a credit agency's perspective, they like the more conservative part of what we're suggesting. Without, I guess, any definite recommendation on that is that, you know, you may have some upward movement flexibility if you enhance your various balances, which you currently basically already have on the books.
It probably should be mentioned that the downturn reserve, when we talk to the rate agencies, they always ask, what is your policy? And we always tell them, well, we really don't have a policy at this point, and that's why we're making this recommendation to have a policy. But once we change these two policies, there's about $2 million of excess reserve that can be used as one-time money, would be our recommendation. Just to let y'all know, all these changes are really creating $2 million of excess reserve for these two policies.
From the $9 million that we currently have in the economic downturn.
We don't need the whole
address this.
$2 million. Got it. Okay.
other questions from this gentleman? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Kevin.
I guess, when will your review be done?
It's a couple months.
Okay.
At least it won't take long, but we'll reach it.
Thank you.
All right. That was a great introduction to what I'm going to do now. So if it's got you thinking a little bit. So we really do keep all these things, everything Kevin just said, in mind when putting the budget together. Especially when he talks about the structural budget, having one that doesn't use a lot of one-time money or no one-time money, if possible, for ongoing operations. And so we're back here revisiting the budget. This is not a presentation of the budget proposed. It's not done. We're still balancing. We've got another month at least to get a budget to you. It will be formally presented not until March 4th. So this is still very preliminary, but we're getting close. So at the work session, at the long-term forecast presentation in December, it was requested we have this work session, and you asked staff to balance the budget without using a meals tax increase if possible. At the same time, right after that, we developed a new collaborative process to build the budget, given that we were going to be facing some pretty significant challenges, and I'm going to go through that process in a minute. And then, as promised, we did meet with the restaurant committee in January, and I'd say they were pretty lukewarm to the prospect of the meals tax. That's probably a good way to put it. It didn't go over too great. So anyway, we went into this process thinking we are not going to put a meals tax increase in here.
And we did explain to the restaurant owners that council had decided to put the meals tax to the side.
Right.
That you all wanted us to come back and provide reductions first before you would even consider that. So they understood that.
Yeah. So what we told you, I think this is a direct slide from the work session in November, the one I wasn't at because I was sick, that we would look at expenditure reductions and delays, and looking at areas of efficiencies, areas of savings, looking at where budgets have been, traditionally or trending to not meet budget, and why is that, and really kind of exploring those issues. And then we also said we'd look at revenue strategies, which we have been, to make sure that we're enforcing where we should be, looking at use of one-time only for one-time expenses, and looking at areas where user fees can be better aligned with the services being provided. So we've done all that. So we came up with a process, and we called it the Lead Team Budget Review Teams, and it was intended to create a more collaborative, participative approach to developing the budget. We had three teams of lead team reviewers, and I've got a box there with the names of those who were invited to participate in the process. And we literally met right with most of the departments between the 2 weeks right before the holidays. They went over line item budgets, they looked at new requests, they looked at budget reduction proposals. They did a fantastic job looking at budgets, asking questions. My final, I asked them to say, put your recommendations together, which they did. They produced written reports, which were great. I can't even begin to tell you how many hours of work they put into this process. They just put a lot of effort into getting the recommendations to Maurice in early January, which we were able to do. So that process, I think, went very well. It's the first time we'd ever done something like that, where we had peers of lead team members look at other budgets, and they would look at budgets that they had known nothing about. So you'd have Parks and Rec looking at police, and you'd have, it would be totally different areas than what they're used to seeing. So they asked really good questions and got a lot of good information and had some good recommendations.
Probably just really good for kind of cross-pollination of ideas.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just budgets.
And I think, from what I hear, many people are in here who served on that team. I've gotten positive feedback that they enjoyed the process, and we're already thinking, at least I'm already thinking about ways to tweak it, and one team in particular came up with some great ways to improve next year. And so it was really a good process, I think. The lead team as a whole also participated in ways they hadn't before. We had a retreat in the fall that started brainstorming budget balancing ideas. And again, that was in the fall, so they were pretty broad ideas. It was before we really had any revenue projections or anything. And so that was really just to get everybody looking at starting to think about the budget. And then we met in mid-January after the lead team, budget review teams, had their recommendations. We showed the lead team their recommendations and said, we still need to balance. You all come up with X number of dollars. And they did. They did it. And so we sat in a room for 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and came up with enough money to sort of get to balance. But again, as I said before, it's everything's still in flux. But they did a great job. So one thing I noticed is that budget discussions had more depth than in previous years. I think for somebody like me that's looked at it since 2003, I probably miss, you know, I probably see through a lot of things. And so having a fresh pair of eyes look at things was just amazing. And I have to say I relied on them a lot for their recommendations. And the lead team as a whole, I think, enjoyed or at least appreciated being able to participate at a different level. So that's kind of how we came up with the process. This is just a quick summary of where we started. Back in December, we walked out of the long-term forecast with a gap of $2.5 million. Well, that quickly went up. So we had a gap of over $3 million. It's like, what are we going to do with this? So we had preliminary revenue and expenditures and a gap of $3 million. So these groups of lead team members were able to whittle that down. We do have a small gap, but that's literally pennies compared to what we have to get done. And I pretty much, I'll get that covered in the next couple of days. So we're really nothing to worry about there. We actually added this is net, 1.6 in revenue, and that's not the meals tax. So although the number is similar, but it's many different sources. And then we reduced expenditures by $1.3 million. So these are starting out with the revenue sources.
When will we hear about it's like February 24th or something that we'll know finally whether that $547,000 actually happens?
Yeah, hopefully that'll stick. You know, I haven't heard that it's going to get.
It seems like it's doing well.
I haven't heard otherwise. And yeah, that's that. She's talking about the state flex cuts number down here.
$1 million down there.
Yeah, the 547. That actually helped us a lot, obviously. For those who don't know what that was, we got to choose where we took cuts for many, many years. And it was, to me, it was kind of the General Assembly's way of saying, you tell us where to take cuts because we don't feel like doing it for you.
Give you money and not take any cuts.
Yeah, so I showed it as a negative number in the budget, and then what I would have to do each summer is fill out a form and tell the Department of Planning and Budget where to take the cuts. So that's what this number represents, and the governor presented his budget. That was eliminated.
Right.
So that gave us $547,000.
Kind of hold our breath.
Yeah, just pray for that one. I mean, if that does come up, we'll know. I know VML and First Cities will immediately let us know if that gets any life at all. So that's good. Going up here again, Brian came forward with several fee and program changes. And a lot of these, or most of these actually, for instance, we're looking at service expansion and adult league sports, $1 increase in pool admission. There hasn't been an increase in 4 years, and we've got amazing pools, and then an increase in private swim lessons. And swim lessons in particular still keeps us lower than the private providers such as ACAC. But these are the revenue, some of the revenue enhancements he's projecting to have come online in 2014. And also looking for sponsors for other programs to help them pay for some of these, some of the events that we do. We looked at increasing large item fee pickup. And right now, as you may or may not know, you only get two pickups a year. They're $25 each, kind of limits you to a dump truck size, which is still pretty large. So we're proposing a $50 fee for the first one, $75 for second, and $125 for each of the following. The first two, at least, still keeps us really competitive with private sector competitors. Now, when you get past that one, we're right on with the private sector competitors, but the fact that we're offering more than one is still a benefit, I think. So really, you're unlimited, and you do pay a little bit more, but the fact is you get more than two, and you would still be willing to pick up the phone and call the city, because a lot of them charge a fee plus a dump fee, and that's probably based on weight. We just charge a flat fee, you know, no hidden fees. so that would bring in about $50,000 in revenue for 14.
This is still where the collection used to be free at one time.
Yeah, I can't remember what year we started charging, but I believe it, Judy, it was free at one time, wasn't it?
Yes.
But I don't, again, I, it was, I don't remember what year. It was a while ago when we made it $25. It's been a while, though, since we did that.
We'll only raise that revenue if people don't say, $50, I'm not spending $50.
Well, you know, I mean.
It seems high to me, but.
Well, if you call, like, 1-800-JUNK, they're going to charge you a minimum of $130. So, I mean, it's very.
I'm thinking of picking up large brush and stuff.
Oh, that's different. That's a
oh,
different
that's not
thing.
This.
I don't think that's, this is like
refrigerators. I just paid $25
yeah.
to have a lot of brush.
Yeah, okay. They'll pick up brush too. Okay, yeah.
But for to pick up brush, that's a pretty big
yeah.
thing.
I want to leave it needing and see how far to me also.
What?
Funds of service.
It's not that, it's not a huge budget item, but well, we can go on.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, let me just say something before I go on. I mean, we have, when we usually present this to you, we have tons of detail behind these.
Sure.
I mean, this is so early in the process. I mean, and keep in mind what I just told you is that all, a bunch of people when it made these recommendations, and so, you know, in that sense, you know, it's a little bit early in the process, and we don't have the level of detail that we normally provide during the budget because things are still changing. And so, yeah, that's... I just wanted to say that as a caveat as we're going forward, because this is a little bit
this
different
is great.
Than
I,
we've done
before.
I would
love seeing this.
But this, I mean, this is your opportunity to tell
yeah,
us if
yeah.
you're uncomfortable
yeah.
with something.
Yeah, and I'm not saying
the right
take
direction.
It out.
Right.
I'm just saying
right.
yeah.
so
I'm uncomfortable.
I mean, I think
sure.
yeah.
with that particular one.
Sure.
But
if you feel uncomfortable, I mean, I'd like we'd like of course
yeah.
like to hear that, but also give us a chance to give you information
sure.
when the budget
mm-hmm.
gets
okay.
presented. So.
Sure.
Parking tickets, now these are for people that park over, you know, are parking on the street and they go over their time, their allotment. We are well below, the Treasurer's Office surveyed 19 other localities and we're still below them even at the $20 rate and then raising parking fines in a handicapped spot where you park illegally to from 100 to 125.
I could say that could go way up.
Well, actually, we could probably we could bring this up maybe. I think $30 was
yeah,
put out there.
Yeah, how does that compare with
such
you know, structured parking all day? I mean,
well,
people
right
make
now,
that calculus.
Yeah,
getting towed from the lot.
Right now, it is cheaper to get a ticket.
That's what I mean.
Than to park in the lot.
I just
when
think,
I worked
yeah.
downtown, I must say that I made a calculated
yeah.
decision
right.
to gamble and to park in spots that were 2 hour spots. This is before I was on city council.
And now
well
we have
before.
Our free ticket.
I mean, this is still
and
lower.
I get about
Chief's still here.
So occasionally get tickets.
Yeah. I would like to
but
look into that.
I was happy to pay them because
yeah.
it was still less than the other.
At least to make it.
That should be more.
Well, I have the list here. We're still lower than Blacksburg. You know, Alexandria is 40, Blacksburg 25, Chesterfield 25, Fairfax 50, Falls Church 50, Hampton is 20, Harrisonburg 20. So the locality averages are actually 23 for overtime parking.
We would have more circling of traffic, you know, if we try to think about unintended consequences. If it was super high,
mm-hmm.
so that it would be catastrophic to get a parking ticket, you would have people driving in circles all day long.
Yeah. I had a suggestion along the lines. You know, Steve gives you one free ticket, and I think we should have something like that also because for the visitors in town, I think it makes a better goodwill in my mind if you can have at least one free ticket in a year.
Then the others would have to be a lot more.
I'm not
to
that keen on that, but I don't see, we're not a university. We're not.
No, but we do have visitors who come to our town. And
there's a cost to park, and if they need to pay for it.
I don't know, but you know, if I were a visitor, I'd park in the lot just to be safe, and I would pay the money to park in the lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think some of the culprits are people that work downtown and know better. I mean, they either you know they
okay.
should either pay for parking or
yeah.
you know they're doing the shuffle
would,
and
at
getting
least be as
tickets.
Much as parking all day. You know.
I think at one point. We